This Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! Yeah. Mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
And here we go. The rockets have launched. The afterburners have burned. And you've tuned into another hour of Long Island's only automotive talk show, Motormouth Radio, with your hosts, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. And we're going to try to entertain you again today, or at least maybe teach you something. I don't know. Maybe we'll teach ourselves something. What do you think, Chris?
I don't know. I've learned more than I've taught on this show, that's for sure. But I'm very excited to be here, Ray. This is one of those times that I truly enjoy talking vehicles, because there are times during the course of the week I never mention a car at all.
Yeah, right? I know.
The way my life has been, never talk car talk. What are you kidding me? I have a very good friend of mine I spoke to just recently, text back and forth, and she says, you know, if we ever catch up, I don't want any car talk. And I'm like, well, no, you're going to get Motormouth Radio. You're not going to get car talk. But the fact that I speak car ease, automotive ease, just once a week now. So very excited to be here. I can stretch the wrinkles out of my brain and chat with you automotively is always a joy. And also taking the calls that we have, because we still have our phone hooked up, the miracles of modern technology, at 516-256-9510. But yes, I'm glad to be here. How are you?
I'm very good. After a hell of a harrowing week, yeah, we all had heavy snow, and I was plowed in a few times, and, you know, between arthritis, tendonitis, and a burning bad back, it was hell. And then, you know, work stuff was going on and all sorts of crap. So, hey, look, we're doing it again. It's snowing here on the island of Long. So,
no, that is true. It's I've had my joys of snow shoveling and snow plowing, snow blowing up here as well, and we have to go through it all over again here in the Northeast. So, and if you have a problem with your snow blower, you can always call us at 516-256-9510. And I have to admit, the snow blower was running. My Cub Cadet was rocking and rolling. Nice. Out there, boy. I had that thing rocking. It was cool. It was good. And mind you, I think I told you I have a little issue with the Club Cadet, because if I let it sit longer than a couple of months, the carburetor, it kind of clogs up, and I have to pull the whole carburetor off and clean it out. And you would think I'd put a little Startron in there. You would think I would kind of top it off with some sort of, yes, exactly, with some sort of blue schmooze to put in the tank to keep my gasoline stable. But no, I would much rather pull the carburetor off this thing, well, and clean it out and curse like a sailor, for crying out loud.
Let me ask you this.
I take our own advice? Never.
What? Well, see, I do, and that's why.
I know you do.
I was my own worst enemy last week, but because I needed to get my big snowblower. I had the small two-stroke out, and it was just, you know, it's just a propulsion drive. You have to push it with these little tiny wheels. And
right. So you dropped the two-stroke, and you picked up the Mameluke.
Yeah, the problem was the two-stroke just wasn't really – I needed the bigger one, and it was buried in the shed like we talked about, and I knew I need – and I didn't take the time to dig it out prior. Of course not, because there's times where I did that and didn't get the big snow, you know? Mm-hmm. So there you go. But when I did dig it out, and I did do it, I had treated it with Startron, ran it dry with Startron like 2 years ago. All I did now was pour fresh gas in it, prime it, and the thing started right up.
Wow.
Like a charm. But
Now, mind you, Ray, I have to bring this up for a second. You do know that that big mamaluke of a snowblower does control the weather. Because every time you take that thing out, you get no snow.
Except for this year. Because we had the snow and the big bergs, and that's when I had to take it out. So, you know, and then what I did was we were in front of my driveway. The sanitation guys left me a 4.5-5 foot high wall by like 12 feet in front of the driveway.
Of solid rock.
So, well, actually, it was movable, but it was packed, and I needed that big blower to just eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my younger daughter helping me. She was doing some shovel work, clearing out my car, and she made mention of, gee, that snowblower, that thing is, it's crazy. And I said, you want to see what this feels like? And she's like, yeah, so come on over. I said, I'll show you. This handle here is that starts the teeth spinning. There's your auger, right? And the other one is the drive. And out of 5 forward speeds, I had it on like 3. So I said, okay, here, start the auger. I said, start the drive. And the thing took off. And she was like, whoa. She went right into the snowbank, which was fine because I knew she's not going to go across the street to the neighbor's house or car.
Thankfully.
Yeah. And she let go and said, wow, this looks like a lot of work. I'm like, yeah, it ain't as easy as it looks. It is a lot of work.
It sure is.
What I wanted to ask you was on your snowblower, is the carburetor outside and accessible, or do you have to take off any kind of body work to get to it?
Oh, good God. You got to take the thing apart.
Okay.
Literally. It all has to, the display, the faceplate has to come off the side of the engine. All the knobs and gears and little switchbacks all have to come off. Then that gets put aside. It is buried. It is truly buried. And if you think that something like a snowblower, if you really are not sure where things or components are, you figure, well, a carburetor, you follow the filter, but on a snowblower there is none.
I put them in mine.
This one, there's really no place for it. The carburetor intake is literally pointed towards the center of the engine.
Okay,
so there's no room unless you have a straw and run the straw out and hang a sock off it or something. There's no room for affix a filtration system. And I looked through the manual, and the manual said, no, there is no filter because there is no dust in the winter, in the snow.
Yeah. You know,
of course.
It's all good points. And the little, my Craftsman, the big one, the big mamaluke I have, actually, I didn't put a filter on that. It hadn't needed it. But the small one, the two-stroke, I did because the tank is on one side and the carburetor is on the other. And I was able to, I saw the fuel hose. And I was like, cut, insert, Englishtown.
Oh, you're talking about a fuel filter. Filters? Oh, I'm talking about air filter.
Oh, no, I'm saying fuel filter.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was talking about the air filter, about like an element or something. But a fuel filter for the little one. Yeah, sure. I would totally do that if I knew where the fuel line was. I have to think about it.
Well, like I said,
it's real small.
Find the gas tank and follow it.
Follow that black thing.
The black, crusty thing with the cracks in it that's about to spew fuel all over the hot exhaust. That's
There's your danger drive right there.
There you go. Right.
But the air filter, there's no place to affix an air filter on that carburetor.
No,
so, it is a chore to get to it. I can get to it now. It takes like 45 minutes, and that's down from the 6 hours that it originally started.
I've come to realize that one of my next purchases, this will be a Harbor Freight purchase when I have a 25% off coupon. Our friend Pirate Paul has one of these things, and it's great. It's a table. It's about 3 foot by maybe 1.5 foot wide, and it's on a scissor, and I believe it runs off air pressure. And you put a device on it like a snowblower, and then you can raise it. So now you can work on the thing. It's like a little man lift, is what
nice.
It is. Because when I service my lawnmower to change the oil, I drag it up onto the stoop on the side of my house. So it's at a workable, it's at a workable, so you're not laying on the ground looking for the bolt. You can sit there on a stool and, I chalk up the front piece of 4x4. I make a whole thing out of this.
Wow.
But that's how they in the shops, they have different holding devices they attach to a bench that they can hold the engines and stuff on. So one of those little lifts is in my future because, again, for the lawnmower, the snowblower, is anything you know, that's kind of a little cumbersome and low, you want to get it up. That's
So cool. I have two lawnmowers. One of them is an older model, and it does have a small little valve at the bottom where it can drain the oil. I guess you would say in the blade section, you can drain the oil from there. Right. So you can get a pan under it, roll it onto the pan, and drain the oil. The newer one that I have doesn't have that little valve, that little petcock down there. No, you have to actually pick it up and tip it and drain the oil from where you put the oil in.
Oh,
so you're holding the dopey thing upside down pretty much and watching. This is, you know, and it's very graceful to do this in the garage. My neighbors laugh at me all the time because I'm sitting there holding a lawnmower trying to get the oil, quarter so of oil out of it.
Let me suggest this. That's the perfect case to do the siphon feed, to siphon it out of the crankcase.
Yes.
And Harbor Freight, again, sells a hand siphon pump that's pretty cheap. I think I've had three of them because they are pretty cheap. And you can just literally, it just makes a vacuum. It just siphons the oil out, and you put the new stuff in.
Well, son of a gun. Yeah, that may be the thing. But, you know, I've been getting arms like telephone poles, though.
Back in the day, I remember, like, in the 70s, 80s, they would advertise those for car use, because they said if you had a stripped drain plug on the oil, like Ford's had really bad drain plugs back in the day, and so did some Chrysler's, and they said they would do a siphon through the dipstick tube and just suck the oil out.
Oh, wow!
Because the dipstick tube goes right into the pan, right?
Sure.
Where the oil is, and I remember that was very popular, and then some people even, you know, worked it up like with a little, they make a little, like a little, a pump, like a pool pump for to pump off a pool cover. It's a small, some of them you could put on a drill, you know, right, low RPM, and use that motor to create the suction.
I can just imagine trying to get 10W40 out of a small little quarter inch hole that takes forever.
But the good thing is it's old and beat up and thin, so it may flow easier. Especially if you get it warm. Yeah,
unless it was old and crunchy like some of the oil I've pulled out of my crankcases.
Yeah, that's
wouldn't want to do that. When you watch it glop out, blurp yeah, out of the oil pan, you know, I should have changed this about 6 years ago. 516-256-9510. That's the phone number to our new and improved phone. It's 525% better than it was last week.
Right. And next week we may be 526% better.
Why?
Because I have been cleared to go back to the campus into the radio station.
Ooh.
So we're going to see how it plans out this week. I'll be talking to the personnel over there, and there's a very good chance I may be doing the show from the console of the state. I don't know if I'm going to remember how to use it.
Yeah, it's true. You don't use it, you lose it. It's kind of funny. I remember when I took my time off and then had to go back and do a show in for you one time, and I'm sitting in front of the console, something that I've mastered for many, many years, and I turn around and look and I go, I gotta drive this puppy all over again? You gotta be kidding me.
We're coming up on the 1 year mark that we've been out of the studio.
Wow.
You know, I figure it was like, you know, late February and March is when I think it was maybe the second week in March that the school shut down. So yes, just a couple weeks shy of a year.
Wow, this is going to be fun watching you, let's see, armpits and elbows, watching you run that board.
It's going to be interesting, yeah.
It will be. Hey, I got to ask you a question about an automotive malady that I've been having on my truck, and I've noticed it in very, very cold weather. Like, we had some bitter cold temperatures back last weekend, and I noticed that in any of the single digits, if I get into the Explorer and I fire it up, it starts fine. But when I go and pull out of the driveway and turn the wheel does this. And when I turn it back, it goes. And it only happens in single digits. It doesn't. Now I'm thinking to myself, oh, all it needs is maybe a little oil.
Yeah.
Where would I possibly get try and squirt anything anywhere within a steering console column, I should say.
You think it is coming from the column? It's up top?
Yeah, it's coming from inside the truck, Ray. It's, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it in the wheel. I hear it in, like, literally right behind the wheel.
Well, there is a bearing. There is a bearing up there.
I guess, yeah.
The upper shaft.
But you would think that a bearing is probably packed. I mean, it's not like you can you can spray anything into it.
Okay. If there is a bearing anywhere or a bushing, then it can make noise at some point. It's just, it's always a possibility. You know what? I would maybe, with the truck running, lay down in the floorboard and turn the wheel and see if you can isolate it from the bottom of the column or from the top of the column.
Okay.
You know, and then that's possible.
Yeah,
and
there is some, but there is a U-joint, I think, down at the base of the column.
Yeah, it's a Borgensen. Yeah, Al is saying, you know, he's right. There's grease up in the clock spring, and that hardens and just, it usually goes to the edges, and then the center stays dry. So, yeah, mm-hmm. It could be any of the above. And, you know, some, a lot of, and then when the temperature heats up, it goes away, right?
It's fine. Yeah, and it's usually, like, I mean, it's almost so precise that at 9 degrees, you'll hear it, and at 11 degrees, you won't. it's gotten, like, that precise. And I'm just thinking to myself, it's like, what can you, it's like I'm looking at it and going, okay, does the wheel have to come off to remedy the situation? And I'm not an airbag guy. I'm not going to go near that. Not to just spray a bearing.
To be totally safe with that, you disconnect the battery. But there is an airbag fuse. It's a yellow connector.
Right. There's a procedure one goes through in order to remove it and replace it. No, I get it.
You know, I'll tell you this. It was like the job I just did on my car a couple of weeks ago, that AC clutch. Mm-hmm. One of the ways I knew something was going on is when the temperature, ambient temperature was like, when it hit the 30s and I started the car cold, I heard a noise from the engine.
Right.
And as soon as it warmed up, it kind of went away. If the temperature were in the 40s or above, I didn't hear it. So again, it was a temperature related noise. And when I took that apart, that bearing was totally, it was the replacement is a sealed bearing, but this one, mm-hmm. you could see the balls. It was open. It was shot. So,
yeah, I'm sure enough dirt got in there that just ruined it.
Well, it was all kind of closed in. You know, it's in a nice closed space, but it dried out. You know, it was dry.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. Yeah,
no problem.
It is amazing what temperature, especially temperatures like this, what they can, the damage that they can cause and the noises. I always talked about many years ago when I was a little baby DJ and I was going to college and learning on my college radio station. I used to do a show used to get in at like midnight and do my show until 3 a.m. and sometimes 3 a.m. till 6 a.m. That's when there was an open slot and when you were hungry to be on the air, that's when you took it. So I would get in the car at 2 a.m, start it up. And I had at the time the Buick Electra. It was a 68, had the 430 four barrel. And I remember in 8 degree weather, I hit the key one time and it started up and it made noises like the Little Rascal's birthday cake. Weep, whoa, weep. Whoa. And I'm like, what the what is that? And just like you said, once it warmed up, it was okay. It took like 15 minutes to warm up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck is that noise? So, and it only happened in single digit weather. So you just live through it.
I'll tell you about something else, another servicing, and people can follow along on this if they want to see. Follow us on social media. On, of course, we're Motor Mouth Radio on the web and on Twitter and Facebook and on Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's Real_MotorMouthRadio, which is Joe's favorite and mine too, by the way. And I posted some pictures last night. I had to do a job on my daughter's RAV4. She was complaining of like a wallowing and like a, you know, kind of like a vague feeling, especially in the back of the vehicle. And I felt it once a couple of years ago, but you know, it's been worth it. We just had new tires put on it. Right. Over at Tire Town, and I brought it to the shop after that because I wanted to do an oil change. So I put it up on the lift, and of course I'm looking around and just doing that checking underneath. And I said, you know, I'd looked at it before and I said, well, maybe it was the tire, I don't know. And then I found something. I found that the left rear shock absorber was installed upside down.
What?
So, you know, a shock has that upper shroud on the upper part of the shock that goes over lower part. Well, picture it upside down. And there it was. So I said,
holy smokes.
That's weird. So I got to the shop yesterday, and the job was to pull that, reverse the position of the shock. And of course,
talk about dirt ruining a component. That's just like, it's like an open cup.
Yeah.
It's just, dirt is just falling into that.
Right.
Holy smokes.
There is the shock upside down. Now this truck, for some reason, this thing is a pain in the neck to work on. The upper bolts, I didn't post a picture of it there. Captured, like you need like the thinnest wrenches. It is so hard. And even there's a control arm that goes below that shock that had to come off. You got to take half the rear suspension out to get this dopey thing apart.
That's what I was thinking when you said it's got like a vagueness, like a wallowing. I was thinking that it was a bushing in a control arm, or there's usually, what's that called, a panhard bar.
Right,
that runs, that sometimes, because I've had that issue on a vehicle where that bar had a bad bushing in it, and it gave this vagueness, like the rear end didn't seem attached.
Actually, the Chevy Cruze we have has a panhard bar. Well, what I did was, when I pulled that shock out, it was not in bad shape, and I dumped it out in the sink, and of course, because I knew there'd be water in there. And
oh, of course,
there was not a lot, but there was some. And then I compressed it. And it compressed. I was able to compress it, and it came back a little too easy. And I said, "Uh-oh, okay, the shock is bad."
Right.
But then what I did is I did that two or three times, and like on the second shot, it got firm again. And I said, "Wow, really? This answers a question that nobody asked me. If a shock was used inverted, would the gas in the shock valve weird and make the properties change?" And the answer is yes.
Yeah, I would assume that's true. I never even thought of something like that. It needs to be right side up in order for it to work.
And I would if someone asked me that, I would have said, you know, I don't know. It could probably, they make it to work in one direction. But I would think that a shock would work either way. It's a sealed unit, literally. It is sealed.
Right. Right.
And I'll tell you this: the first couple strokes were very light, and then all of a sudden it got stiff. So. Of course, when I'm in there, I find bad sway bar links that were really, really, and that's another joy to do on that thing.
I'm sure.
Because they're hidden inside, and like on the left side, the driver's side, you know, you have very little room to get the nut off up top, and you got to use an Allen key in the middle, which is it's a pain.
Oh, yeah.
You really got to drop.
Those are awful.
You really got to drop the control arm. The picture you're seeing now is the actual driver's, that's the passenger side, and with a, it's a snap-on hammer I used as a
wedge. And what we're looking at is the lower control arm is separate from the the knuckle and the rear, basically the rear suspension. Yeah,
I was gonna remove it, but it was that bolt. Now you got the exhaust system in your way, which is a pain in the neck. But the sway bar link hides up in there, and even that was a chore. But I said, hey, you know what? Let's put those, because the sway bar links, yes, could do it, and the shock certainly could do it. So. And again, you can see that on Twitter. It went on social media. So it's on Twitter, it's on Instagram, and it's on Facebook.
If you want to see
the picture. Instagram and the website got a few more always than Twitter. Twitter limits you to three. The other one, I think I put five pictures on. So that was that. So, yeah, that was my it took me pretty much all day, you know, to do that.
Wow.
Because that was a pain in the neck. You're dealing with suspension, and you're one person. You know, even to put that back together, you have to hold the coil spring up in there and thread the sway bar link, the bushing, you put the bushing up on the link, and as soon as you let go of it, it falls off, you know. You have to hold the bushing on, hold the coil spring, and then you have to lift the arm. So now you need three arms at least.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, it took a while. It did take a while to get it done.
And this is something that I find, I have to hand it to you. Hats off to the Guarino camp here, because you're able to do this in the shop. Now, you drove to shop in this vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
And you have it apart.
Right.
In the shop.
Right.
So in order to, you have the pressure of getting this thing back together again in order to go home.
Well, you're right. The other thing is that shop has so many cars and trucks available I could have grabbed another one and just
this
plow truck and come home.
Okay, because but then you can't give the plow truck to your daughter to take it home.
No. Oh, well, she had my wife's car. So
all right, so you can alternate vehicles. But just see what you're doing. That's something that I would fall apart like a cheap suit if I knew that the car I was taking apart I had to rely on to get home to eat. It would be catastrophic to do that. It would be awful. It would be awful to do it. So that's why I like knowing that I can bring a car into a garage, work on it, and go, if it falls apart, if it turns to poop, then I just go get another car because I'm home.
Yeah. The good thing with this is one of those things where it can go back together the way it came apart if it had to,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be no worse off. It's not like you're... you're changing something that's like you're pulling a transmission out or whatever, but
exactly.
But still, even to take this apart to put it back together was tenuous. It was a bit of a tough. But I'll tell you what I did do, and this will be, if I can get to it, maybe a post today or tomorrow at least. My FJ is at the shop still, and it's ready to go. I got to switch cars,
right?
And it just so happened that right in front of it, where it's parked, was this pile of snow on one side, on the left side of the FJ.
Lovely.
I said, I've been watching, I follow the FJ Club on Instagram. I've been looking at pictures and these videos and seeing what these guys do. I said, I got to make this thing climb snow. I got to do
it. You did not.
Oh, I did. I got that thing going and the rear wheel slipped a little, so I put the diff lock on. And then I had, now it's a posi rear. And then I said, I kind of started climbing. I said, wait a minute, let me back up, jam this puppy in four-wheel low. And let me tell you, I stopped it right at the top of the mountain, and I was only like 20 degrees. 20 degrees felt like I was going to flip over.
Every once in a while, I look up to you as an authority figure. I look to you as a responsible individual. And then you tell me stories like this, and I go, that's...
No, the kid comes out. It's like, you want to play with the FJ. And I tell you, 20 degrees does feel like you're going to flip over. And to get out of the truck was hard because you open the door and you're like, that side is way off the ground. And literally, if I would have just stayed on the gas, I would have literally driven over this thing without even a gasp out of that thing.
I was going to say, you drive over it, wonderful, congratulations, but how are you going to land? What wheel is going to touch the ground first?
You would have just driven over it, really.
Or would the roof touch the ground first?
I kind of felt that way, but I'm not used to doing, guys like what it would do when there was snow. Because I saw a video last week of a guy, he put it up on Instagram on the FJ Club site, who follows us, by the way. And the guy was in like 3 feet of snow, just driving through an open field in 3 foot of snow, and it was just like flying out of his way. It was like, get out of my way, here I come.
So I
had to try it.
just when I thought you were an authority figure. Now you need the disclaimer. Okay, the views and opinions of Ray Guarino are not necessarily the views and opinions of Motormouth Radio.
unless you're Jeep and Al who warmly encouraged me to keep it up and do more.
Keep your cards and letters. Keep them. We know your comments.
And you know what? I got word that Billy G did the same thing in his part of Queens yesterday with his Blazer. He had to make his own parking spot. And you know what? Chris, you've had trucks. You can do.
Yeah, but also you have. Please remember. Let's just say this: the trucks I had were probably a fraction of the price of the truck that you're driving right now. So just letting you know that when it comes down to it, it's simply finance. It's if I rolled my Bronco, okay, I'm out $1,500. Big deal. You roll that FJ, you're out a little bit more.
Well, yeah, but you know what? The things that like a 31 degree approach angle, a 32 degree departure angle, you can go, and that's not lifted. You can go over a lot of stuff. So, so to Jeep and Al again, thank you, Al, for your warm encouragement and all. And I know he wants rather see me in the Jeep, but whatever.
Yes, and thank you, Jeep and Al, because you made me the voice of reason, which is really bad.
Which is rare, yeah. So listen, what else is not rare is we're going to take our bottom of the hour break, and I need to know, do we have an honor group of the hour?
Why, yes, we do, Ray, right here.
Tell me.
The Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour this week, if you yell at your television while watching car shows, like you were watching the Super Bowl, right? If you yell, "Ugh, you can't do that modification, you ruined it," or if you yell, "You can't restore a car in 2 weeks," or if you yell, "He's such a jerk,"
which yeah.
sometimes we get yelled at, but anyway, or if you yell, "Why isn't anyone wearing safety glasses?" That's for our internet know-it-all.
Okay.
So if you yell at those car shows like you were watching some tribal sporting event, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Nice.
There you go, Ray Ray.
Thank you. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break. And when we come back, we're going to revive something on this show that since we're going to be reviving going back in the studio, we're going to revive an old piece that was a fan favorite called Quiz the Swizz.
Oh, boy.
That's where viewers and listeners everywhere would write in and send us questions to test your automotive knowledge and of histrionics and bridge builders and things like that. Well, I have a quick Quiz the Swizz today. We'll start easy. So it's just a quick little multiple choice quiz, but it'll get the listeners ready for what's to come in the future. So
I'm going to be embarrassed again.
No, you know what? Your track record with this is stellar. Had so much. Oh yeah, I used to do this every week, and you were more than 80%. Right.
Oh my gosh, you hold me in high esteem, young man. I don't think it was that. Well, I don't think I did that well.
Some will say I threw you softball questions, but some of these were not. They were not easy. Some of them were really stuff that definitely I would guess and guess badly at, and you just like, oh yeah, Roebling.
That's my standard answer for everything.
I know, but sometimes right. All right, so with that, we'll be back in about a minute or so. We'll take care of a little bit of business, and we'll be back with more Motormouth Radio. Keep it where you got it with Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer on 90.3 WHPC. This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Motormouth! You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
Now hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Motormouth!
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No, I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evinrude.
As always, you are consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming.
I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
I'll call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Motormouth!
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motormouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Please stay tuned for Motormouth Radio on Sundays at 12 noon, every Sunday, exclusively on WHPC. Join the Motormouths, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Features, information, guest interviews, tech tips, and all your call-in questions on all topics relating to automobiles, and these guys know their stuff. In case you haven't heard this show, not only is it very informative, it is hilarious at times. A lot of call-ins and a lot of crazy people calling in with problems with their cars, and Okay, Joe and Ray offering their expert opinion on these things and doing it in a somewhat comical fashion.
All right, thanks for sticking with us, hanging out with Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, talking about snow and labor and jobs and working on your cars. And
maybe I stretched the wrinkles out of my brain here, Ray.
Yeah, you had a little smoother. That's good.
Much smoother.
And that's a good thing you did, because now we are reviving that venerable show segment that people loved and flocked to from far and wide, Quiz the Swizz.
We need a soundbite for that. Quiz the Swizz.
I don't think I... Let me see here. No.
You don't.
This was one of our favorites. Of course, you won't be able to hear it, but this was one of our favorites with that Joe and I used.
No sticker for you!
There you go. That was No Sticker for You, because that's a great one.
No Sticker for You. I used to love that.
I don't think... You know, I might have made one, and it may be on my little voice recorder. I think it was like a Quiz the Swizz with that. But anyway, this is where usually I call these questions, but sometimes people have sent them in and said, hey, ask Chris. So we make it a Quiz the Swizz. And it usually, like I had said, deals with histrionics, you know, car, automotive trivia. Right. This is a quick little multiple choice. And it's kind of telling for today. But the question reads as follows. In 2019, more vehicles were built in China than in which country? So the choices are A, Germany, B, Japan, C, the United States, or D, all of the above.
Wow.
So in 2019, more vehicles were built in China than which of those countries or all of them?
Well, okay. So I would think, America wasn't a banner year for automotive production in America, I would say, in 2019.
Okay, I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
Out of those three, America had built more than the other two singly.
Really?
so just to give you a little more information.
Okay, well, with that being said, I'm probably going to have to go with all of the above.
And you know what? Damn it. I need... Hold on a second.
Ray is getting up. Ray is leaving. Ray has abandoned the show. Oh, I got a cowbell.
I need a sounder.
More cowbell.
That's the cowbell that Tom... Oh, I'm sorry. Our good friend Tom sent Joe and I cowbells. Because at one point I was playing music with cowbells and we were, you know, kind of Mississippi Queen, and he sent us cowbells. So,
did I get it correct?
You are. And the way this breaks down is Germany in 2019 built 4.66 million cars.
Right.
Japan, 9.68. And the United States built 10.88 million cars.
Wow.
Which totals to 25.22 million vehicles.
Holy smokes.
China built 25.72.
Holy moly. Wow.
So it was a close race, but China still beat out all three.
That's incredible. Now, a lot of times, I know China builds knockoff vehicles, which is astounding when you think about it, when you could walk up to like a BMW X series, right? Isn't that the X and Z series? Are there? Yes. That's their 4x4s, their SUV vehicles.
Yes.
And China builds a knockoff of it that is darn close to the parameters of a BMW SUV. And it's, you got to look at it sideways. You're like, wait a minute, is that a BMW or is it not a BMW?
Right.
Because it's that. It's close, but no cigar. I'm sure they can't build it. I mean, they probably could build it technologically. They could build it perfectly, but they'll get sued. So they build it kind of like what it should be, but it's not, but it is, but it's not. So, and I know they have the technology to do it, because this is what I always felt that countries like China do. They find our technology. They take not just ours, but they take the technology of the Germans and the Europeans and, of course, us, and they perfect it. So they don't spend any money on research and development. That's what we do. You know, and then they take it and go, this is pretty good. Let's copy it.
I remember back many, many years ago, and I don't remember when exactly, but I remember someone using the term, which was fantastic, how Japan at the time, probably in the 70s, they said, you know, we were the great innovators. They were the great imitators.
Yes. Japan did it too.
Japan did the same thing. But Japan did it with quality, at least. You know, they had quality to their products.
At one time, they didn't. If you remember, remember when we were kids?
Well,
Land of the Rising Sun was like tin.
Right.
You know? And I remember those days.
Well, compared to the American stuff, but now the China stuff, obviously, you know, people rant about that all the time, about, you know, from anything from household products to tools to, you know, any kind of stuff you can make. But, you know, Cliff brought up a good point, how a lot of the German cars are built here in the country. Down in South Carolina, actually, one of our friend's sons works at the BMW plant down in South Carolina.
It's huge.
And and even where my niece and her husband live, that's the port where they send them out from there. And I saw that. I mean, we drove over that when I was down there. And like, man, it's huge.
Yeah, it's big white building. It's big.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And they build Corollas and Camrys.
Right.
In North Carolina, South Carolina, too. And they build more than they produce in Japan. And that's the reason. Because we are the market now. We are the market.
Right.
That they're catering, basically, they guide and build their cars for our tastes. And that's why, remember when a Corolla or a Camry used to be like this little, it looked like a little appliance.
Yeah.
With four wheels and with little tiny chrome bumpers and small little gadgets, because they built it for their market. And then we start to like them. Then all of a sudden, if you take a look at a Camry or a Corolla now, they're these big swoopy things. It's the size of a Buick. It's like, what in the world? What is this, Camry? Is this Camry looks like it ate a Camry.
Right.
They're just Civics, the same thing. Look at a Civic and an Accord. They're huge compared to what they were.
Right.
So what they were like 30 years ago, but they are catering to our market, to our market share. And that's because that's being American. We got to drive big cars and you're in America. Well, you know, that's what it's turned into.
At one time I had a rental car and it was a Kia and a Solara. And I tell you, this thing inside was appointed really well. You closed the doors. It was like an 80s Cadillac. It was like the eardrums would pop. The doors were solid. It drove.
Hell yeah.
Wow. This, and I remember when Kias first hit the market in the 80s, they were really crap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, junk. Totally.
But,
I remember talk about the junk. I had a Hyundai Sonata. Was it Sonata? Was it Sonata? What was the real small one? The Hyundai. Was it a Sonata?
No, there were different ones over the. There was an Excel. Remember?
Excel. That was it.
Crap.
Yeah, I had one of those, and it was not only was it not a Hyundai, it was a Mitsubishi. It was totally rebadged, and I had that car for like I'd say 2 weeks. I cannot drive this, and it was now, mind you, it was like an 86 or an 87. I think that's what it was. It was one of the first years Hyundai was producing vehicles here in this country. And I was like, oh, man, this just has to go. And I found some college kids, sold it to them. And it was fine. It was a fine car. Don't get me wrong. But it was just like, oh, no, no, no. I mean, I know where my line in the sand is. It's pretty low.
And, you know,
my bar is pretty low. But that
Bill told me about this. He mentioned how the Buicks were, you know, there's Buicks. They love Buicks in China. And Buick killed Pontiac.
Yes, they did. And it was because of China.
Yeah, GM had they were looking to cut down and restructure, and they looked at what brands sold more where, and in China, they wanted all Buicks like crazy, and they said, okay, Pontiac, small market share, blah, 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 kill it. So so actually Buick killed Pontiac because of that, but they go where the money is.
But it was close. Yeah. It was close between the two divisions. Which one was going to go? Yeah, it wasn't. And I think, you know what saved Buick? What put it over the edge? I think was, and then please correct me if I'm wrong here, it was the back seat. In China, they value the space behind the driver and passenger seat.
Really?
They find that is a sign of luxury, a sign of prestige, is the size of your back seat, right?
So all I have to do is drive SUVs.
Yeah, drive station wagons.
You know, while we're on this topic, I want to mention something, and we're not getting paid to do this, so...
You're right. We're not?
No, certainly not this, no. But I read about this show last week on HBO, and I started. There were two episodes I watched, a new episode tonight, called The Lady and the Dale. And it's about the Dale, which was a three-wheeled car back in the
60s.
And the lady, who was actually a man who transitioned to be a lady. I mean, there's dual stories going on here. And what she did was became a proponent and decided to take on Detroit with selling this car. And you know, I started watching it last week. There's only two episodes, so I got through them. I'm always leery of this stuff, but it's a kind of a riveting story. If nothing else, just to see what happened, how an independent challenged Detroit and all the forces that be. And tonight is going to be a good one because there's now the feds are involved. So now
I was going to say, I'm not going to give away the ending. Go ahead.
You watched it, I guess. Huh? Have you seen it?
No, I just know the story.
Okay. I did not know the story before this. So I think it's a four-part miniseries. Today is part three. So 9 p.m. HBO, watch The Lady. Well, actually, it's on demand. You catch up on the first two. That gives you all the backstory.
All right. And then I'm not going to talk about how many deals they produced.
We're not here to do that. But,
no.
But it is, you know, when it fell right into this conversation. So I think it was that.
And it's true. There's a lot of skullduggery in that story.
Yeah.
So it is very interesting. And like you say, it is, let's put it this way. The sex change wasn't the only transformation in that story. So I'm just going to leave that right there.
They really didn't even get into that, to how far that transition went. They didn't.
I'm trying to think of her name. Is it Liz? Liz?
Yeah, she went by the name Elizabeth, yeah.
Elizabeth, yeah. I'm just trying to think of her last name. I don't remember.
Connolly or Conker?
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Like that. But yeah, when I was a kid, because I was a kid, this was, we're talking like the mid-70s here. So when I was an adolescent, I remember the Dale and how she was going to take on. I also remember the Dale as she was going to take on Detroit. I also remember the Bricklin.
Right.
The Bricklin, Malcolm Bricklin was going to, he decided that he didn't feel like selling Subarus anymore. So he decided to produce his own vehicle. And I remember literally just glued to those individuals that wanted to take on Detroit and how well they did. And really was an impossible task in the 70s.
It's pretty funny. Where I used to hang out in the mid-70s, it was at a friend's house on Ocean Avenue in East Rockaway. And literally, it was great. He had a big house, and it went two blocks deep. So you could pull in his driveway and drive out the other street if you went all the way through. It was an oddball piece of property. But on Ocean Avenue, and this is right off Sunrise Highway, we would just come down Ocean either way, and just people just drive up on the lawn and stop. You know, like, beer. And then, you know, people would come and go all night long. It was just we congregated. But the house next door, the guy had a Bricklin. And I remember one day I was there during the day and I said, hey, what's that? And walked over and looked at it and said, you know, it immediately caught my eye because I liked the way it looked.
Yeah.
You know, like a DeLorean is a more polarizing look, I think, than a Bricklin. Although I did see a picture this week of a DeLorean that was made as a station wagon, I think on Twitter. And they asked, like, which one would you prefer? And I said, I would take that wagon. It looked better as a wagon.
Really?
I thought so. But the Bricklin, I just thought it really had a nice, talk about a Euro look. I liked it. And it ended up, this guy was a little, I met him once. He was a little eccentric and just, again, guy liked to buck the system and do things different. So,
yeah, Malcolm Bricklin he was a big safety aficionado. And that's why the front bumper looks like a big log on the front of the Bricklin. Because he liked the safety. He felt that it was unnecessary to smoke in your vehicle. So he never, I don't think he put an ashtray or a cigarette lighter.
Oh, yeah.
There's no room for it in a Bricklin.
Right.
But yeah, and basically he wanted to, oh boy. I'm looking at some of the pictures that are in there. Know-it-all's posting on, is posting while we're here. But yeah, that's why he wanted the gullwing doors. There was something safety oriented about the gullwing doors on the car. But it just, unfortunately, it just failed.
Which, again, like a DeLorean, they look great, but you get in a parking lot and someone parks too close to you, you can't get in or out.
Right.
You know? and it only had a little little window. Well, actually, the Brooklyn window opened. The DeLorean had that little half window. You couldn't even climb out of the damn window in that car.
Yeah, and that was really the problem with dealing with an independent bucking the system, because a lot of times the bugs were not worked out completely because of finances. Yeah. You know, basically, that was really the real problem. These guys were working on a shoestring budget.
Yeah,
John DeLorean was truly, even though he was financially solvent at the time, he was still the problems and the logistics of putting together his car was just astronomical. I mean, he had to put together a car in Ireland because that was the only country that would accept him, pretty much, and they were in the middle of a civil war. He's trying to get a car together.
Episode of Phantom Works where a guy brought a Bricklin in and he wanted it, you know, cleaned up and fixed, but he wanted all those little styling cues. Like, he didn't want that front bumper. They had to make a new piece and graft it in, and, you know, he wanted all that stuff undone. And when they were done, the car took on a totally different look. It was really, really, really cool. But they were saying, like, the body gaps and all, there was a, you know, it was tough because it was fiberglass, so a lot of that stuff didn't line up. There was a lot of gaps. Which reminded me, when I had my FJ up on the pile of snow yesterday,
right,
and I opened the door, it opened and closed fine. I'm thinking, boy, any other car, if you did that, you wouldn't be able to open the door, you know?
That's for sure. Yeah. Man,
how'd they do that? That's pretty cool. So, yeah.
Cars flex. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially when you notice it when it's on any car that's on a lift.
Yes.
Does your lift, right, obviously in the pictures, your lift suspends the wheels. It's not like you drive onto a platform and lifts the whole car up. So when that happens, yeah, your car is flexing.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's tough to open the door.
It is.
That's what I was concerned about when I put the Chrysler 300 in the air. When I pulled the wheels off it, do the brakes and all that good stuff, and I knew the car was going to sit up for a while without any wheels on it, and I was able to open and close the doors. I was like, "Whoa, this is awesome!"
Yeah,
you know, that has not been the case with all of my convertibles, especially my Mustang was not.
Oh no.
Not good.
Yeah, very true.
I put the Mustang in the air one time, pulled all the wheels off it. I had to climb in like Batman just to get in the car. It was not, doors were not opening on that one while it was in the air. So, yeah, cars flex, and it's good that the FJ stayed pretty much solid.
Well, it does have a truck chassis under it, so it's better.
It is. It's not a one-piece, right? It is body-on-frame on that.
Oh, yeah, and it's a truck chassis. You look at it, it's like a 2x6. This thing has a frame. But the good thing is, the interesting thing is, it has clamshell suicide doors. So when you open the driver's door, the passenger door opens out the other way.
Right.
And they said one of the things they had to do in production was there's no column in between it.
Sure.
There's no B pillar. Together, right? And they had to make it structurally sound. So they built a cage around that inside of the body. Oh. I know now they use boron. I don't know if they did that back in the year that my thing was built, but they reinforced it to the point where, you could put that thing at different angles with the doors open, and it's going to be, and it can take a side shot. I've watched the videos where they do the crash test dummy.
Yes.
This thing takes a sled shot at 40 miles an hour in the side, and the people walk out. So
Wow.
Okay.
So it's got some weight to it. And it's got some structure to it. How's the mileage?
Actually, I think I told you my Impala weighs more than the FJ.
Oh, I believe that.
And your 300, your car weighs more than the FJ, without a doubt.
Oh, I believe that. But speaking of weight and structure, how's the gas mileage on it? Because I know you've been driving it now for a couple of months at least.
I haven't been driving it. It's not on the road yet. I haven't been driving it. It's at the shop.
What?
Yeah. I'm driving the Mazda. Remember, I haven't sold the Mazda yet.
Oh, so you have to sell the Mazda in order? I thought you'd been driving them both.
No, no, because I'm going to switch the insurance, you know, and really don't have a place to stick another car. So, and I've been having
keep the Mazda, sell the Impala. Come on,
I've been having that's not a bad idea. I've been having Mazda separation, is what it is, and I know
you're really not looking to sell this thing.
I don't want to sell. But I have to. So anyway, one of the picks on that vehicle that everybody said right from the start was the gas mileage.
Yeah.
In my year, up until 2010, they get about 15 to 17 miles to the gallon.
Yeah. Okay. You
know, I mean, that's kind of truckish. Sure. After 2010,
they get on the Explorer.
What's that?
That's what I'm getting on the Explorer. I'm getting 17.
Mm-hmm. After 2010, they did some engine tweaks and changed it, and that went up a few miles to the gallon. Right. So it is what it is. But yes, so that's the other thing. I got to give up fuel economy to drive something that gets the gas mileage that my Impala gets, you know. But whatever. I will do it. I got to sell it. I was talking to Mike yesterday about strategy to sell. He doesn't think Craigslist is the way to go. He thinks Facebook Marketplace is the way to go.
Yeah, I would say yes. With tongue in cheek, I would say yes.
What would you do if you had to sell your car to this now? What would you do? How would you?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because we got our tax bill in this great state of Connecticut. They tax you on your cars. We got a tax bill, and usually I've swapped out a car or something like that. This was like the first year and a half where I've not bought or sold anything, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, I know.
usually something gets filtered out of the garage, but it's a consternation I'm having right now. Just thinking about trying to sell a vehicle real fast. Craigslist you're always going to get some sort of crazy. It's going to call you 8,000 times. You get 8,000 crazy saying, is it available? Is it available? Is it available? And the same thing happens now with Facebook Marketplace, because they have that little button that you click, is it available? And the button is useless. It's like if the ad is there, the car is available.
Right.
And it's been an argument that buyers and sellers have been having now for years. So do you want to waste the $5 on Craigslist because they charge you now? Right. Or right. Do you want to do it for nothing? But Craigslist, I think, has a further footprint than Facebook Marketplace.
Really?
So yeah, I think it does. I think on initial searches. But it's one of those things that I'm still having consternation over, still having pause over which one I can honestly say is better. Other than the fact that the cost, I would say go with Facebook Marketplace first. But I don't know if I would rule out Craigslist now. Is there anything any better? No, not at all.
My original thought was leave it at the shop or for sale sign in it, and let people go there. You know, so come in here.
Yes, I think that to me is a luxury.
Yeah,
for selling a vehicle that you can sell it there.
Yeah,
and yeah, you're on a busy road, and there's a guy here that's lives on a busy road up here. I swear, I think he's making it. He's striking it rich, because every time I go down the road, he's always got a car out there with a for sale sign, and it's always a different car.
Right.
So it's just amazing. If you live on a busy road, you don't really have to have
it's Uncle George.
Yeah, right. It's my Uncle George.
One of them. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Uncle George, we're getting to the end of the show. We're going to have to wrap, and we will be back next week with more Motormouth Radio. We don't know about a guest. We'll see. I have a few feelers out. There's some hooks in the ocean. So, Chris, what do we say before we get out of here all the time?
Don't follow us home, and take care of your snowblower.
Right. And with that, out. Motormouth Radio, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer. We'll see you next week on 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.